Hi, and welcome to the first Making the Media podcast of 2024. My name is Craig Wilson. From the whole team here, we'd like to wish all of our listeners and subscribers all the very best for a healthy and successful year ahead. And looking ahead to this year, and reflecting a bit on last year, is where we're going to start in this episode. Our guest is Rob Ambrose from the analyst Coretta Research. Having started as a journalist before moving more into the technology side of the industry while working for the BBC in the UK, Rob also worked for a number of technology vendors before co-founding the company in 2020. They work with both sides of the business, the tech buyers and the sellers, and have a deep understanding of the market we all operate in and the key business drivers behind it. So, first of all, I asked Rob to reflect on what he saw as the major trends of 2023.
Firstly, it's all been about recovery from pandemic. So 23 has been the first almost normal year that the industry has been getting back on its feet. Well, it would have been if it hadn't have been for strikes in the US, and that's impacted some of the production, but, you know, at a macro level, not a huge part of the industry. So we've seen this sort of getting back to a bit of normality. I think we've seen two things happening in parallel as well in terms of media tech. We've seen a lot of business as usual and doubling down on investing in tech where it's really going to help make content better and more efficiently. So in other words, we haven't really seen any massive new trends over the past year. And I'll come back to that because that seems a bit odd to say. But when you say, is there anything that's been transformational in the industry that's actually impacted the industry already? The answer is not really. There've been more of the same, and you know, maybe more shift to cloud, more shift to remote and cloud production, use of new tools, and yep, use of AI. We'll come back to that. But hasn't been a sort of one topic that you can hold your hand up and say, this has completely come to dominate the industry over the past year. There is a topic that's come to dominate all of the industry conversations over the past year, beginning with A and ending in I, but it hasn't yet had that impact on actually how people are working. People are kind of thinking about it and getting ready for it and trying it out, and vendors are putting it into products, but it hasn't yet transformed things. I think the other thing that we've really seen maturing over 2023 is the changing consumption of content. So we've seen the maturing of the streaming industry somewhat. We've seen the flurry of platform launches that we were seeing a couple of years ago. That's now settled down, and that battleground has become much more about the big streaming services fighting it out to see who's going to be the dominant player and who's going to gain the subscribers. And of course, we've also started to see the owners of those streaming platforms, whether they're the huge international media companies, the Disneys and Paramounts of this world, or whether it's the European or regional players like the ITVs or RTLs of this world. They're also now focused not only on how they can stake out their turf and launch their platform and win eyeballs, but of course, increasingly, they're now figuring out how they make money from those platforms, because whereas consumption has changed, these new platforms haven't necessarily been so successful in turning all of that viewing online on streaming into revenue. And I think that's also been the big dominant trend over the past year. And that's also why we've seen increased focus on things like fast, free, ad-supported streaming TV, which is, as I'm sure everybody knows by now, it's effectively taking a linear-like experience, but doing it on an over-the-top streaming service, which creates all sorts of interesting benefits to content owners, because you can put content onto a fast service that would be probably unprofitable to create a TV channel from, and perhaps wouldn't be available through content rights to put onto a pure advertising VOD platform. But when it's put onto fast, it can be quite economical to distribute that content and reach platforms. Plus, it taps into an audience of people who still want to watch traditional TV channels. So that's why we've seen the rise of fast. But just like other parts of streaming, as yet, nobody's making much money from it.
Yeah, lots of things in that answer, Rob. One thing I want to pick up on is, how is that change in the consumer behavior also then driving the buyer behavior and the way that the companies are themselves focusing on the investments they need to make?
I've always been of the view that everybody should be completely focused on the consumer behavior, because that's ultimately what drives everything else in the industry, both directly through revenue, because all of the revenue that broadcasters and media companies get to spend on tech ultimately comes from those consumers, whether it's through subscriptions or advertising or public funding. So you've got to have your eye on the ball, what's happening there, because that dictates not only how much money there is in the industry to spend, but also where the focus of that spending is going to be. And needless to say, when you look at what's growing and what's declining in the industry over the past year, the categories that are growing are all directly related to streaming in one way or another. So, for example, we've seen growth in everything that goes on around creating content. And that's because the sort of growth in these streaming platforms has unlocked the need for more and more content, and in particular for that content to be localized for those different markets. So everything about localization, VOD preparation, so that's services that provide a package up VOD for all of the different outlets, those have seen growth, as have post-production. And that's not just in 23, but that's sort of over the past few years and projecting forward. These are some of the kind of categories that we're forecasting to continue growing as well out over the next years through to 2027. And then anything relating to monetizing that content on streaming platforms is quite buoyant at the moment, at both software that's needed to sell directly to consumers, things like user management and billing. We've seen a lot of focus there. And then equally, ad tech for broadcast media is also on a growth trajectory at the moment, because broadcast companies, streaming platforms, are having to invest in ad tech because they want to diversify away their revenues from just being dependent on subscriptions to also being dependent on advertising. And they don't necessarily just want to hand over the job of delivering that advertising to players like Google, because they, you know, many streaming platforms would say that's dancing with the devil. We don't want to give our big competitor our advertising to deal with. So those are all areas where we're seeing growth, delivering user experience as well. So companies that build and design apps and front ends, we've seen in the pay TV business as well, a huge growth in two things, really. One is Android TV operator tier set-top boxes. So pay TV and telco companies are increasingly creating their super aggregation plays sitting on top of Android TV. And they're also building apps to put those same services out onto smart TVs and other streaming devices. So the companies that create those user interfaces and front ends are also seeing growth at the moment.
I mean, one thing that's very, very obvious from all the things that you've talked about, one of the things you've not talked about is linear television. And linear broadcast is something that, from a reach perspective and also from a revenue perspective, is still something that's very, very important to many, many broadcasters. So how does that square with where the investment's going and the direction of travel?
You know, I remember it wasn't that long ago that the sort of conversation was around when is there going to be the death of linear? How long is it going to last? And I think what's really interesting is how things like FAST have actually reinvented what linear is all about. And I think I kind of believe this for a long time, actually, and it's now kind of becoming clear from the evidence that linear television as such will never disappear completely. It's just going to change in its format. So you can sort of start to segment what that linear TV market looks like. You've got a continued need for big live event coverage, be it live sports or elections or events. And those are the sort of things that the big national broadcasters will continue to do. And indeed, we see that, you know, live production technology continues to be a big part of the market. Interestingly, a lot of that is going to shift towards cloud-enabled live production in the coming years. So we've seen the shift from rolling OB trucks to making more use of remote production. The next step of that journey is just send the cameras. Everything else takes place in the cloud. All of the switching and productions don't need an OB truck anymore. You just have some software running in the cloud. that will move from small events that it's currently serving up to the big ones in the coming year. So live events, that continues to drive live and TV and the big kind of entertainment formats that, get people watching around the TV. But of course, anyone with kids also knows that they watch far less linear TV than perhaps people of my generation and your generation do. So viewing trends changing as well. And I think what you'll see over time is that a lot of the longer tail of linear channels will simply shift to be delivered through FAST, because the cost of managing and playing out those channels can be greatly reduced if you start taking a kind of streaming mindset rather than a linear TV mindset. I think rather than sort of linear disappearing, we might actually see more of it, but it will just be cheaper and less broadcast engineering focused in the way that it's delivered. There'll be much less concern about playing out frame accurate channels and much more concern about making, you know, targeted ad insertion and replacement, ad replacement in those streams. So I think we'll see the we'll see the discussion changing over that period of time.
You mentioned AI earlier on, Rob. Would it be fair to say that in 23 AI was a bit of a victory of hype over reality?
It's really exciting. And if I said at the start that there hasn't really been much going on over the past year, I sort of hinted that actually, even though there hasn't been much happening in a tangible way in AI, it has absolutely dominated the conversation this year. And I think what we're seeing as analysts is so far a little bit of a disconnect perhaps between the approach that some of the technology vendors have got and the approach that some of the buyers have got. So technology vendors have been, you know, rightly keen to nail their colors to the AI must. Everybody had to have some sort of AI enablement in their products at NAB and IBC this year. That doesn't mean that they were doing much that was of any use. And that's the important thing. What we see in the data when we've gone off and spoken with buyers is that actually where they want to invest in AI, it's in much more specific use cases rather than general AI enablement. So that's perhaps where the disconnect is between vendors who've said, yes, our product is now AI enabled, and somebody who's perhaps using AI tools in post-production who wants a tool to specifically do facial aging or voice replacement. Those are the sort of detailed use cases that are actually getting the interest from buyers. So the onus really is on the technology vendors in the industry to use all of these services that are out there to add value to the buyers. And what people are looking for is stuff that will save time and effort and will really take away busy work. Finding stuff, being able to search through archives, you know, obviously things like speech to text and translation are well established, but you know, aiding CGI work, for example, where perhaps in the past we would have had to have fairly expensive creative staff, but people who weren't really doing a very creative job, you know, painting endless mats for CGI for films, not very exciting job. Nobody really wants to do that. That's where the AI will start to kick in. So I think the challenge ahead now is for the vendors to harness the AI services and capabilities that are out there and translate those into tools that actually create an ROI and a benefit to buyers. And of course, at the same time, we've been seeing buyers, particularly the bigger, higher profile media companies and the public service media, and paying really close attention to the rules that they want to apply around how they're going to use AI, particularly generative AI. What when the AI is creating content, when is that ethical to do? But from a particularly for, say, news content, what's the right role for AI in news and how do we manage that effectively? And how do we signpost what's been created by AI and what's been created by humans? So there's all those sort of ethical issues that are playing out. I think what we'll see over the next couple of years is a real settling down. I think we'll see the AI coalescing around those use cases where it adds most value to the media companies, takes away cost, repetitive work, and adds efficiency. And I think the generative AI will be used somewhat sparingly by the traditional creative industry, but again, filling in the gaps where there isn't really any creative advantage of having a human do it.
You mentioned news there, Rob. So in news terms, you know, what are the areas of focus that they're looking on? Is it about efficiency? Is it about new platforms? Is it about, you know, TikTok is something that's come up, you know, quite a lot in some of the conversations we've had around it. So when you look at the industry, what are the sort of areas of focus for them?
Well, as I mentioned, I started my tech career in news, so that remains a real interest of mine. And I spend a lot of time talking to newsrooms around the world to figure out what they're doing. I think that the dominant theme that we've seen in news is the transition away from a TV-centric operation in most newsrooms. Not all. There are still plenty of places where TV is super important, and that's fine. But in many news operations, the transition has been to a kind of true multi-platform operation. And by that, I mean, perhaps over the past 5+ years, you've seen a bit of a focus on taking the 6 p.m. news and chopping that up and putting those clips onto YouTube or Facebook or wherever. And that fills a gap, but it doesn't really understand that the audience is on those platforms. And TikTok is kind of the most pointed example of that. You're not going to take a 2-minute 6 p.m. TV news package and stick that on TikTok and expect to engage with a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old through that. So the smartest platforms, and this is where the shift, I think, now is to think about each of these outlets as its own unique platform that each has its own different agenda and needs a news creating and packaging in a different way. There's a different art to writing a web story, to writing a TV intro, to writing a TikTok package. There's certainly a different art in cutting a 10 or 20 or 30 second piece for TikTok as there is in cutting a 2-minute TV package. And I think now what we're seeing is that there's a focus on getting the efficiencies upstream in the news operations so that the planning and the news gathering operation is common across all of those platforms. So there's one person who's going out to film a piece of video, but doing it with all of those platforms in mind and also getting still images and so on and so forth, feeding that all into one big pot, and then having people who really understand what TikTok is all about manage the agenda and manage the packaging just for that platform. And I think that's got to be the key to engage with different audiences on these different platforms is start with the audience and then work back into how best to meet their content needs.
And is that kind of approach common across different territories, or do you see different emphasis perhaps here in Europe compared to what there is in the Americas?
I think so far that approach is most mature in the bigger multi-platform operations in Europe and some of those in the US. The US news market is unusual in that it's, as you know, very dominated by the local call letter stations that are network affiliates that all are doing an increasing amount of news because they have, economics means that it's actually more cost efficient in North America to fill more airtime with news often than with network programming. And the increasingly those stations are owned by one of the big station owning groups who are able to kind of create efficiencies across those stations. So I would say those are more TV centric, but certainly in the bigger markets in the US, we're also seeing those same organizations set up those dedicated digital teams that have a different agenda. I think in the smaller markets in the US where there's less competition, you're still seeing a bit of the put the TV package onto digital, but I think that's changing over time. In other markets of the world, though, you still see a more traditional approach in many less mature markets. And that's quite interesting as well. Still, TV news is very important in many parts of the world. So it's not a one size fits all. But I think the direction of travel is clear that newsrooms recognize that they need to kind of do different kinds of content on each of those different platforms, but that they need to plan and manage that centrally so that they can do it cost effectively, because if there's one common thread across all news operations everywhere in the world, it's incredibly expensive, but very difficult to make money out of news.
Indeed. One thing you talked about earlier on was about, in terms of the general trends, cloud, you know, remote production, remote working, you know, coming together. When you're looking at cloud in the growth areas, is it around that live production, or is it more around things like storage? And that's really where people are looking, and that's where there's growing amounts of investment going in.
I think it's across the board. I mean, there are certainly some specific areas of growth that we've seen, and Storage is one of them, interestingly, and I think that again comes back to the shift towards streaming. If you want to make all of your content available on platforms and you want to be able to exploit all of that content you have, you've got to have that sitting in a format that is readily available to use. So people are very often going back into their archives, revisiting them, localizing them, bringing them up to date, and then putting that archive content into cloud storage from where it can be readily distributed onto these different platforms. And some of that is actually just natural progression of archive technology maturing and, you know, on-prem archives needing to be replaced because they're obsolete and so on. So there's certainly been a shift into cloud for storage. But I think also you're seeing, you know, the ongoing shift into cloud for everything else as well. Any sort of business-like tools are now cloud by default in nearly every place. So things like, MAM or the tools to manage the back end of streaming platforms, anything that's sort of software related is inevitably in the cloud. Anything that's content related kind of then comes down to economics and workflow, where it best sits and where those resources are available. I think it's important to say that cloud is not a panacea. There are use cases where cloud makes sense and there are use cases where cloud doesn't make as much sense still. One of those areas where it still doesn't make as much sense, economically at least, is for sustained 24/7 operations. So it's not necessarily as cost-effective, like for like, to play out your TV channel from the cloud if you didn't change anything else as well. Now, all of those fast channels are played out from the cloud, but the economics are fundamentally different to start with. So if you take like for like and just put it in the cloud, that's not going to be cheaper. And everyone recognizes that. It still may be more flexible, and there still may be other benefits that means you still do it, but you've got to balance all of that together. I think you see perhaps a more mature approach to picking and choosing the right strategy for the right use case. You see more use of sort of hybrid models and edge models, where there's sort of more of that computing power that may sit on-prem as well as what's in the cloud. Sometimes that hybrid is a bit of an excuse for kind of keeping the old workflows going and not really embracing all that cloud has to offer. But I think by and large, the discussion about should we do cloud or not is one that's done. People are broadly in favor of using cloud for many things and recognize when they should and when they shouldn't. And I think most people are comfortable with that now.
I mean, another area that where cloud comes up at times, rightly or wrongly, and perhaps we'll talk a little bit about that, is when people begin to look at the impact on the environment of production. And now this is an area where I think at times there is a big difference between what people say about their commitment to the environment and the reality of the buying decisions that they make. Is that something that you see as well?
It's a topic that we've spent a lot of time looking at during 2023, and it's clear that it's a topic that is more important for many buyers now, particularly the bigger companies, the sort of public service media companies and some of the largest organizations that have their own sustainability targets to meet. And that's kind of passed down to the buyers. Equally, as you say, when it comes down to it, they're not generally going to pick a less relevant solution just because it's greener. I think also we tend to think about green topics and the environment in terms, sometimes just in terms of carbon and the energy consumption of different solutions. And yes, potentially cloud can be more cost effective in some cases, but perhaps not in others. So again, everybody has to kind of add that up carefully. And it very much sometimes depends on simple things like where the cloud data center is and how that is powered versus where your own data center might be and where how that's powered. So that it becomes quite complicated. But it's not just carbon that needs to be considered. It increasingly the companies that are paying really close attention to sustainability are looking at that throughout their supply chain, including those that are manufacturing and creating products, how that's done, and ultimately if they're making something from hardware all the way through to the end of life of that product as well. So sustainability is more than just carbon, but I think if you just look at carbon, yes, it's taking a greater role for buyers. I think any technology vendor that doesn't take it seriously will find themselves cut off from being able to sell to the biggest technology buyers over the coming years, because it just won't be possible unless you have your own sustainability policy and you can demonstrate how you can help your customer save money.
So Rob, let's look ahead to 2024. Let's get the crystal ball out. So what do you think the main areas of focus are going to be for 24? Continuation of what we've seen in 23 and maybe a maturation around things like AI?
When we look ahead for 2024, the value for anyone who is trying to sell technology in this industry, and indeed the reason anyone is going to buy that technology, is going to be primarily for one of two reasons. It's either going to be about making more money, it's going to be about increasing the revenue that people can get from customers, subscribers, so anything around engaging and understanding and monetizing those subscribers. Everything around increasing the revenue that can be made from advertising and generally ensuring that as much of the revenue that everybody has become used to in the TV world, the linear TV world, can start to translate through to streaming, given the vast expense and investment that's been made now in those streaming platforms and content. And then that's one side of the profitability equation. Of course, the other side is expenses and costs. And that's where the other real focus is going to be in 2024. It's going to be in tools that allow media companies to save money and operate more efficiently. And that's really going to start behind the scenes in those sort of human-centric, inefficient, lumpy bits of the business for managing the content supply chain and preparing and managing and storing content and archives. But also some of the things where the new technology can enable new ways of working. So, for example, as we mentioned, changing more and more production towards cloud production, where there's even less need for truck rolls and people to be on site. So all of those will come into play, and the technology that enables those will be what dominates the market. I think some of the things that we've talked about, like Gen AI and like FAST, they're all about enabling one or other of those, either making things more efficient or helping to identify new ways to create revenue. That's going to be the real focus for the media technology buyers, because they're all aware that they have to do more to improve their performance and profitability.
So Rob, a final question, which is the one, you know, I've asked every guest on the podcast, which is, and first of all, so thanks a lot for that. It's really, really interesting. But what is it, if anything, that keeps you up at night?
I to a certain extent, everything. I always joke with the team that I'm always up early in the mornings. And I think it goes back to years earlier in my career of working as a journalist and being up for the breakfast shifts and starting work at 5. It still feels like I do that. I get very excited by all the things that we can do at Coretta Research. We've grown over the past year. We're now a team of 15. Going into the next year, we have Coretta Portal, which offers the leading platform for industry data and analysis that's used by many of the leading technology vendors and technology buyers in the industry. And then we also do a lot of advisory work, helping people navigate this really complex industry and make sense of it. And we do that, again, for both technology vendors and technology buyers. We're increasingly helping people make huge multi-million dollar procurement decisions and manage that for them. So when you think of all of that, it's all very exciting, but there's a million and one things to keep you up at night across that, and running that complex business is really exciting, but definitely a few things to keep you awake at night.
I can imagine that running your own business is definitely the kind of thing which could keep you up at night. Thanks to Rob for his insights, and let's see how 2024 works out when it comes to his predictions. What do you think? Let us know by leaving a review or by contacting us. We are makingthemedia@avid.com via email, or you can follow any of the Avid social channels and interact with us there. If you check out the show notes, you can get a link to an article looking at trends in cloud workflows, plus the latest updates on the new release of Avid Stream.io, a new ingest and playout solution for broadcast facilities. That's all for this episode. It's nice to be back for another year, and we'll be back every 2 weeks over the coming months with more in-depth conversations for the people making the media. For now, thanks again to Rob, thanks to our producer Matt Diggs, and thanks of course to you for listening. My name is Craig Wilson, and for now, it's goodbye.